Okay, so we're recording this now, and Jack is going to set up a phone call for other New York Rising people.
Okay. Amari, where are you, Amari?
Is there a phone?
Right there. There's your phone.
That one.
Got it. And here comes Dimash.
Okay.
Pardon?
We'll keep it open anyway.
Okay, so everyone should speak loud. So I'll just, since I kind of sent out the email, Susan Stetcher, I work for the community board. I want to thank people for coming. Goals and the community board have been working with New York Rising and community boards 2 and 3, also on some huge projects that will be described. And we just wanted to be concerned that that the small businesses in this area have some input on the, because all communities are so different. So that's kind of it, and I'm turning it over to New York Rising and Jackie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jacqueline. I'm with HR and Advisors. We're a consulting firm that was hired out of state of New York to work with the lower Manhattan community on producing a plan for New York Rising. New York Rising, there's some information here if you want to take some of these. New York Rising is a New York State program that was started by Governor Cuomo to give money to communities that were the most severely impacted by Hurricane Sandy and tropical storms in the past few years. And the idea behind New York Rising is to encourage communities and empower communities to come up with their own projects to enhance their own resiliency. So the state appointed a number of committees, planning committees, for each community that was severely impacted by Sandy. And it's the job of the committee to come up with projects to propose in a reconstruction plan. So there's a Lower Manhattan Planning Committee, Damaris is on it, and the Planning Committee is currently, it's a little unfortunate because this is a late part of the process, but the Planning Committee is currently in the process now of voting, or they're about to vote, on a series of projects that they've come up with our help on enhancing their resiliency. And so they went through a process of looking at what some needs and opportunities were, and then strategies to address the needs and opportunities, and then projects from those strategies. It's like a very complicated process. But the needs and opportunities that they came up with were around things like protecting and helping vulnerable populations, enhancing residential resiliency related to vulnerable populations, and then also enhancing small business resiliency, and particularly helping vulnerable small business owners throughout the planning area of Lower Manhattan, which is everything below 14th Street. And there has been a particular interest in helping business owners, for instance, in Alphabet City and in this area, which I know is severely impacted by Sandy. So the project that the committee came up with to focus on this particular need is a technical assistance and information program focused less on providing financial assistance in the form of grants or loans and more on providing really targeted information to vulnerable small business owners who might need it in multiple languages. And so the idea of the project that they're thinking about is to have a small business resiliency information and assistance center that has a help desk and has intake counseling that can, where small business owners can come in and get information on everything from how to protect inventory to business continuity planning, and then to offer professional audits too of commercial spaces so that business owners can actually find out exactly what they might need to do to flood-proof their space. So this is the idea that the committee has been considering, and they're going to be voting on this project. I should note that this process right now where we're at is in a kind of general stage where the committee votes on kind of general, a part of that represents general priorities to them, and it's up to the state once the committee approves the project and the committee puts forth this plan, it's up to the state to work out all of the details of how the project would work implementation-wise. So what's good about meeting with you is you can provide us with some feedback on what some of your priorities and concerns are. And at this point, what we might be able to do is incorporate it, some of this detail into the plan and the way we describe some of the issues and what some of the priorities are for a project like this in terms of what are the major concerns of small business owners in CB3? Are they structural things like floodproofing the space? Are they things like understanding how to protect data or inventory? Is there a need for information about particular topics, those kinds of issues? So what your concerns are would be, you know, great to learn about. And, you know, if there's specific things that you think an audit is useful for, those kinds of issues, I think, would help us to you know, understand how to describe this project.
I'm wondering, would it be redundant or useful if we went to understand what businesses are here, what kinds of businesses, and the organization, so we know who we're hearing from?
Sure. So do you want to go around and introduce yourself and your business?
Sure.
Hey, my name's
Jessica. My name is Aida Balonsosa. I'm representing Esperanto Restaurant, and it's located right on 9th Street and Avenue C. So we were right in the heart of the disaster and everything that happened.
Yeah. My name's Enrique Cruz, and I'm with the ALBOR, the Association of Latino Business Owners and Residents, and I represent businesses and residents, and I'm sorry, some of the businesses that I told to be here and I'm here, one of them told me, Enrique, you know what happened anyway, you were here in my store, so tell them what happened. In regards to what you're saying and what you just finished saying, I have to tell you that one of the most important things, and I saw it because I walked the streets, I was with my fellow business partners. If the monies that you're using to help the business owners can be used for one specific thing, and it's very simple, make them power plant compatible. Because the most important thing was that some businesses couldn't run because they had no power and they had no ice.
Right.
They couldn't serve people. Their food went bad. If you make them power plant compatible, and when I say power plant compatible, I mean because, let's for instance say my office is on Stan Street. When the power went out, I had to get an electrician. I had to go buy a power plant, and you know, around those days, they were raping people with power plants because they knew the power went out, they're going to pay whatever they want. And then I had to pay an electrician to make me power plant compatible. If we can make people power plant compatible, I guarantee you on the business side, because when we did it and some of my business partners did it, they had huge numbers for those days because they were the only ones open, but they had to pay electrician to make them power plant compatible. If I like to get to the nitty gritty always. If you can make businesses power plant compatible, it's not that expensive. And if you got $25 million,
I know.
But hopefully CP3 gets a good chunk of it. If you can make businesses power plant compatible, I guarantee you they will open, they will stay open, they will be open. And, granted, some businesses have a lot of refrigerators. You're not going to run every refrigerator, but if you can at least run one or two refrigerators and make them power plant compatible, when the next, God forbid, the next thing happens, a lot of businesses can stay open. And then when you make them power plant compatible, you're probably going to incentivize them to get a power plant, so if anything happens, boom.
I'm from Oserito, 125 D. I lost everything. In the basement, I lost everything. My clothes for almost 10 days. And I start again. It's too hard for me.
How much you spend?
I spend a lot of money.
How much?
Because it's a small business.
What kind of business?
Restaurant.
I'm Damaris. Sorry. I had a tooth extracted last night. I'm Damaris Reyes. I'm the executive director of Bulls for the Lower East Side. Welcome. We do eviction prevention, workforce development. We work on issues of the aging. We've worked on and support small business issues, and I'm on New York Rising. I'm also the chair of Lower East Side Ready, which is a network of organizations in the Lower East Side that's working towards preparing for the next disaster.
Hi, I'm Whitney Barrett. I'm representing the small businesses in the historic Seaport District. The Old Seaport Alliance is a newly formed merchants association that was formed in the wake of Hurricane Sandy. The area needs centralizing in terms of information and auditing and understanding what people need. But in our case, and I'm sure as with many others and distinctive issues, the issues for us was that these buildings are from the 1800s. They're certainly not resilient to water, even though some of the doors prevented water coming from, head on through the doorways, they seep through the sides of the buildings. The walls are porous, so everybody lost pretty much everything. And most of the small businesses were, if not destroyed, severely damaged. And 18 months later, I think there's something like, half of the space is still vacant, and it's not a glamorous post-hurricane recovery anymore. That, it's a critical situation for us. And there's, we have other issues just geographically because there's construction, and where we are located just south of the Brooklyn Bridge is, we're kind of barricaded on all sides for various reasons, some of which are easier to tackle than others. But as it relates to disaster recovery, if another disaster happened anytime soon, the businesses there could not recover again. So, definitely here to impart that and learn from everybody else about, real tangible solutions that you've come up with that could help us, and want to learn about how to, kind of centralize information, not only as, in terms of a help desk where people can come to get information, but also as a way to, understand, have people give us fair information so we know what they might, be dealing with and what the biggest challenges would be to coming back again, and how they could best, prevent having to come back all the way and prepare.
Sarah Romanofsky from the East Village Community Coalition. We're right down the block. We have also our hands in a lot of pots, but one that's probably most relevant to this is working with merchants in the East Village to help them organize. So that had been very difficult to communicate with them in October, November of 2012, since there was just no network. So a lot of us were on the ground in the snow, going door to door, which is just not a great system when there are 1,500 storefronts. So we've just, we started organizing officially in September. We've been working with local businesses for 7 or 8 years on other initiatives, but we now have engaged about 70 local businesses. We're continuing that outreach. It's just starting to grow. We're really working on infrastructure of the group and about priorities. I'm happy to share just general comments, but I think that much like what the Seaport's working toward, just having a stream of communication is really a good start.
I'm Beatrice Aramoni. I have two small businesses on the corner of 9th and C, a retail wine store called Bricks, and they retail cheese and cured meats and home in-house prepared, ready-to-eat items called Barnyard. And we're we sandwich Esperanto and Naida and her colleagues. we experienced pretty much the same as everybody. I'm sure most of they took up more water than we did. I felt really bad for Avenue D. Avenue C was, our main problem was the basement and the lack of being able to get any service from Verizon. Obviously, Connison was very busy, and so was Verizon. But as small businesses, we have to stay open, or we just can't survive. We were closed for 2 weeks, and again, it was pretty much restarting week. Our equipment in the store wasn't all damaged, but everything in the basements was destroyed, all of our inventory. And we recovered. It's been a struggle, and things have been different. I don't know. I often try to think of what we could have done as a business to make things less impact, to have not such a great impact, but I have trouble. I don't know how to prove it. And prevention is my, that's my biggest concern, is preventing the next one, because like you said, when the next one happens, it definitely will. And I think that as a community, and we were targeted, by the media, it's gonna happen. And nobody, I think, believed it to that extent, and that's unfortunate. And so I want to do everything I can to make sure that the next one is taken very seriously.
Okay.
My name is Richard Robiak. I chair the Economic Development Committee for Ward 3. Just to remind folks, Community Ward 3 goes from 14th down to the Brooklyn Bridge, from 4th Avenue to Bowery over to the river. So when we looked at the economic development issues, the problems there at the Sandy, it ranged from Knickerbocker Village, and they were out for a really long period of time, to Basketball City right on the water, to the projects, to the small businesses on A, B, C, and D. I like Enrique's idea about the power generation. Trying to get generators in here was a huge problem. The other problem was communication. So if you're thinking of setting up a communication, don't forget, you look at this storefront, and this storefront is generally what the Community Board 3 is. Mm-hmm. 25 feet wide, 100 feet deep. That's it. You don't have a staff of 10, 20, 50, 100 people working for you. Mm-hmm. 5 to 10 folks, maybe, in each of these places. So whatever you're going to develop, you're going to have to scope it to that size mm-hmm. business for Community Board 3.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Susan Stetzer from working for Community Board 3. And I just, since all the businesses here are food businesses, I also just want to mention another one that was sort of a dramatic example to me that I know Sarah also has been working with, and that was a store on Avenue C called Rudy Volcano, I think. They had gathered throughout the year, gone all over the world to buy inventory, and their big time was Christmas. They lost everything in their basement. And I think, besides the food inventory, which is probably a smaller inventory because it's perishable, there are people that lost everything. I know the New York Rising has been talking about how to protect inventory. So I think, for our businesses, that's a big issue. I think our businesses are not a lot of high technology like in some other areas. And just no cash flow.
Mm-hmm. Right. We've heard that that's a big issue.
Pardon?
The cash flow issue is a big one.
There's a lot of concern about taking out loans.
Yeah.
People were looking for grants. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of concern about taking out loans because of the risk.
Okay.
And if you've already said, you already see that you've lost, first of all, we lost, basically all the businesses lost Halloween, which is big down here. And then it went right into the holidays, and so it was really devastating, since most businesses, maybe not some of the restaurants, but most businesses by January already aren't making that much money, so they're really relying on that October, November, like Q4. That's obviously a timing thing, but if it hits at the wrong time, a lot of businesses in this neighborhood make 40 or 50% of their money in those 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're not going to take on a loan necessarily if you've already lost half of your income for the year.
Right.
And one other thing I'll add is after Sandy, the community board, Sarah, and some other volunteers went door-to-door to businesses. We were doing this with forms from Small Business Services, like BBC. And to try and get information to get them help. And, you know, people weren't terribly cooperative because they felt hopeless. They felt like they weren't going to get aid. They don't really feel a connection to the government. And so few people would even fill out information. And I think that's really important to note.
So what I'm hearing is that information and knowing what to do would be very useful. How to floodproof or how to protect inventory, to have that kind of more targeted local assistance around the resources and the measures. Is that right?
No, loans would be less useful. We had one of the first meetings, elected officials pulled federal, state, and city agencies together, and they said, we're going to give you loans, fill out the forms, we'll promise you loans.
Right.
Nothing happened.
I was just going to mention that. And I know, sir, at the end of the day, a lot of businesses were looking for these supposed loans that were going to come through.
Yeah.
And the red tape around it was like, all right, so what am I doing? Am I going to go through, jump through hoops? And some of them did try to jump through hoops. So maybe when, God forbid, the next one happens, maybe one of the things, without having spent a lot of money, is to remove some of the red tape when it comes to assisting businesses with loans. Because while some of them might not have wanted them, I had in my office a bunch of businesses come and say, dude, I need help. And so these supposed loans that, and by the way, then it was FEMA. It was like three agencies that you had to go through. Mm-hmm. FEMA, SBA. I don't know, what was it?
SBA.
SBA.
SBS.
And SBS. And then they once sent you to the other one, to the other one. So just make it easy. Like, just have like field operators that go out and talk to businesses and say, hey, you know, what do you need? How much do you make? Because obviously they want to get paid back, so they're not going to. But make it easier. I filled out those forms for like, I'm not going to exaggerate, for like 15 or 20 businesses. Not one of them got it.
Yeah, I think that's the helplessness. I think they do want very low-cost loans. They're afraid, you know, they have to know it's low-cost.
Right.
But, you know, we had FEMA coming in, and they have their workshops and all these libraries and everything. No one got money. The process is that you get rejected, and then after you get rejected, then you have to cure these things. You can't do that.
No.
Can we give a chance to the gentleman who came in to introduce himself?
Okay, yeah, this is Jack. We have a premise for the future in the 14th, 5, 6, 7, yeah, May. And during the 10th, the power is off for 2 weeks, so we came out this. Didn't get any money, even if one came. So if the come here, see if we can get some money.
Okay, that's something that the loans apparently are supposed to be low at 1%, and they're also offering like a matching grant through SBS, and something that I'm working on behalf of the merchants, none of whom have received any of that money, is we now have the ear of Senator Squadron's office. And so I'd actually love to pass on your information to Mary Cooley, who's... Okay, so have you been speaking with her? I mean, it's a good time to contact her and let her know and give her an idea of how many businesses applied. We have businesses that didn't even apply because they were hearing from their peers, fellow business owners, that not only, you know, they've applied last August, and they hadn't heard anything, and then they asked for more information, so they gave them more paperwork, and some of the businesses had to pay their accountants for the information, and they're spending money to try to get this money. Nothing has shown up. So I think that is a very real issue.
Yeah. Also, I mean, a lot of the paperwork that they needed, that we needed to provide, was in the basement that got flooded, that was just completely gone. And so, you know, you feel kind of powerless in those situations. And it's, you know, making it easier, making it making information accessible, like come to the area, you know, not like a week or two after, but like during those days when it's really happening.
And don't go through your bureaucracies. Like if the governor is God forbid this happens very soon, like put field operators on the street and let them go and talk to people and let them be the ones to go back at the end of the day and say, hey, Joseitos, you know, they were flooded, that business has been open for 7 years, they need this money. Like, don't make it difficult because in the moment, at that time, they need real help. Mm-hmm. And electric is one, and I don't know how you floodproof that. You said floodproof. I don't know how you floodproof because at the end of the day, there was water everywhere. So you couldn't. I know that you could build a pit in the basement with a pump, but when everything is flooded, how do you flood it?
We have a pump in our basement. It's just a joke.
Yeah. So this is a really difficult issue for the east side that we've been looking at, which is like you can put up. You ever seen these like aqua fences or deployable barriers that people put up in some of their businesses? It's like a little metal barrier. You could put up one of those, but the sense that we get from the engineers we work with is that water will still come around. It's just everywhere. And so what the east side needs is like a comprehensive flood barrier along the East River. And there are a lot of like a flood barrier, like a wall basically along the East River. And there are certain groups that are looking at the Big U, for instance. I don't know if you've heard about this. They're looking at different ways to do that, and hopefully we'll get some funding to do it. It's a very, very expensive project that goes beyond the $25 million that we've been allocated through this process. But that's the direction that people are looking in to provide that kind of protection. I think in terms of flood-proofing your own stores and spaces, and what we've been looking at is there's certain measures that you could take, like there's a concept that you can accept that water will just come in and use certain types of sealants on the walls that will protect them from getting damaged. You can elevate your inventory and like to the greatest extent possible, assuming that the water won't come up above a certain elevation. And that might just involve elevating things on very simple platforms. So there are some simple measures that you can do that would help, not necessarily eliminate the risk, but help. And so those are the kinds of things we've been thinking about, whether or not, you know, a technical assistance or information program can provide help with, and an auditing program can provide help with, so you mitigate the risk, even if eliminating it entirely is something that will have to come with a much larger project that the city does.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be long-term, any real sort of flood protection, and understanding that this is landfill, a lot of it. In this space, we did not get flooded from the street, but the basement was flooded. And so even if we create a berm of sorts, some sort of flood barrier along the East River, which is what I handed out to you, we're having two meetings next week where there's going to be a lot of discussion about what's being proposed. There'll probably still need to be some sort of ceiling of sorts within those basements because the water will still come from underneath the ground, which is what we experienced here.
And I guess for small business people, how many of you had insurance that you ended up getting money back? Because the general story that we were hearing was that businesses would approach their insurance company and they were told, it was an act of God, sorry, it's not covered under this. So I'm wondering if perhaps this program could help us set up an insurance coverage of some sort that the government could handle to help provide assistance in that direction.
I think it's also being sure that people know what they need to have in their insurance. If there's like one way of building a program, there's another way of being sure that people are aware of the technicalities. Because there were the act of God arguments, and then there was also an argument about, I remember Megan describing this, about, well, the flood didn't the flood didn't cause your damage, the power outage did, but the flood caused the power outage, so no one's responsible. It like made a donut. So I don't know if structurally that is erasable. And I mean, that might be a bigger, you know, policy thing that we'd have to do. But just even, like, that was also a very specific circumstance that we had. Not that we shouldn't prepare for it as well, but also thinking about all the opportunities. So if you're a business owner, what exactly do you need to reassure that you have flood insurance, the extent that you possibly, that you, the highest extent that you
can? What we found was that the flood insurance, to have a flood, even if it was an act of God, included in our policy, would make the cost prohibitive for our, for us to be able to even carry it. Every year, in the event that it doesn't happen, then there's a lot of money that got put into something. And not that it's not worth it, but you just, you know, you have to weigh up the cost. This is like a, you know, a high volume, high traffic neighborhood. We rely on the people that are around us to survive, I think. You know, there are some, certainly some exceptions, but we're, both of our stores are strictly, you know, like 90% of our customers live within a 2-block radius. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's hard to focus on, you know, like getting insurance for a flood that will happen next year if I can't maintain my costs in the year before it happens. So, you know, and we had insurance and we tried to go, you know, kind of, you know, do what we could. Okay, so we had power outage, plant blew up, and our inventory in the basement, nothing, you know, like we had in the store, actually, even everything was compromised because it wasn't refrigerated. Luckily, it was cold, but it still was not. It was a $5,000 deductible, and then again the proof, like Anita was saying, you know, like we need invoices from, you know, the things that you're good. Mm-hmm. And we sat there and did inventory for days. I was like, how can I can't even find these invoices anymore. I don't know how to get, you know. And it's also on top of that, just needing to open your doors and do a lot of cleanup. Our building did not get help from the owners of the building, which is where I think that. And I don't know if this is the right thing to say, the preventing of the damage to the basements, that should rely on the owners of the building. As a business, I can't floodproof my, you know, the property. It's not my property. I pay to be on the property, so it's, you know, and we got to help from the neighbors. But that's a totally separate issue.
That's a really important consideration, though, that we've been trying to look at the difference between tenants and owners. What sort of things, you know, should building owners be responsible?
I think you want to waste your funds on a building that, you know, clearly can afford to do most of that on their own. You know, and it's for me, again, just the ability to get back our services that we pay for, to, you know, Con Edison and Verizon and Internet. All our credit cards are processed online, and we didn't have internet for weeks, right into the Thanksgiving holiday, which is in retail are absolutely our biggest months. That's where we make all of our money. And then almost into Christmas, we were forwarding ourselves to our cell phones. You know, our business, I had to beg Verizon on Thanksgiving to please make the phone calls come into my cell phone, which was all I could do. But you do what you have to do. Getting back is the struggle, getting back to business.
I've also been concerned that if the basements are improved, if they're sealed, if that's going to make the locations more valuable, and whether the rents are going to go up, and then the people, the businesses,
you're going up regardless.
That are here, I mean, and in this community, our highest priority are the businesses that are the small ones that serve us, you know, serve the people around. You know, are they going to then be priced out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could spend, I spent hours in the basement elevating all my inventory, 3 milk crates above the ground, and I really should, I don't know what I would have better used my time, those desperate 3 hours, and it was within 10 minutes I opened the basement and just the water was already up to the top of the stairs. And I could just see the boxes falling. The next morning, wine bottles floating. It's, you know, it's hard, but you don't. I don't think all prevent, you know, proofing in the world wouldn't stop that.
Did you get any concessions from the landlord? See, there goes another one. You know, this, and I say this not because, you know, I know this is a capitalist country and obviously this is a good market, but you know what? Why can't the state step in and say to Rebbe and say to the owners, you guys, you know what? They lost money. You got to lose a little bit of money too. Like, nobody got I did not hear one of the business owners that came to my office get a concession from the landlord. Not one.
We even got a concession from the state liquor authority, but not from our landlord.
Yeah.
Which was really sad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe one of the things that the state can do, I mean, I don't know, maybe you get sued in court, but at the end of the day, they should come up and say, guess what? They're losing money. For the amount of time that they were closed, you can't charge them money. If they were closed for 2 weeks, for those 2 weeks, you can't charge them.
The general thing was the lady said, though, that the SLA gave them a break.
But the landlord didn't.
But that was the first time that I heard this.
But the SLA, how did the SLA give you a break?
You have 30 days by law to pay your invoices from the day they come in.
And 30 days.
30 days.
Yeah.
They give us an extra 30.
Yeah.
It's unheard of. Well, of course, yeah. I mean, I'm just using that.
No, yeah, that's like for
the
sure.
People
yeah,
that we pay rent right to were.
Yeah. So one of the things is in the landlords be understanding with the retail tenants and say, hey, guess what? You were closed for 2 weeks. For those 2 weeks, I'm not charged. Or take a hit. If they were closed for 2 weeks, I'll take a hit for 7 days. You take a hit for 7 days. But take a hit. Let us both. You know.
I don't see how the government really can interfere.
Yeah, no.
What you're saying is absolutely right. But
it doesn't make that money.
The government can do that.
The issues with SBA and the federal loans are very complex beyond anything that we've looked at. The bureaucratic, the red tape they're dealing with is just like so immense. I can tell you that there is a program the city is developing through the Economic Development Corporation, BDC. It's called the Business Resiliency Investment Program, BRIP. And they're in the stages of even like hiring an office to run the program and all of that right now. And it has, it's a $110 million grant and loan program, and it will target both businesses and building owners around upgrades to enhance resiliency, and even things like for businesses like protecting your inventory or continuity planning. I don't know. I think that they're expecting to provide assistance to something like 600 businesses. I don't know much more than that at the moment, but the point is there's more assistance coming, and I think that the agencies are trying to figure out exactly how to do this. And that program should be up within, I think, the next few months. I don't know how long it will take for that kind of stuff to...
So how can I get the detailed information, the contact information? On the website?
I can tell you how to get information on that, and then I wish it were up now. There's no way to apply yet, but I can direct information to you.
So I just leave my email. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Could I come in for the side?
So can anybody talk a little bit about situation. I know that their cash flow situation. I know that many businesses were afraid to apply for loans. Some of them applied for loans. Some of them sent some claims to their insurance company. But I'm interested to hear a little bit about how cash flow wise they were impacted, and if there's residual impact still. So I've heard from other businesses that are now in trouble because they had to spend X amount on replacing their inventory, their equipment,
and were closed for a significant amount of time and have not been able to really truly recover and have found themselves to be in arrears of their rent. So have you heard, did you experience, would you say that you were in that position for some time?
Well, for Esperanto, I mean, we're still recovering. I mean, our bar is made out of wood. And so the bottom of the bar is rotted out because of all the water damage. And we're still, I mean, we're, you know, it's like because of the style of the restaurant, you know, we can kind of get away with it. But
for a little while.
Yeah, you know, but it's not what, you know, how we want to have, how we want to represent ourselves. And a lot of the money that we used at the beginning was definitely to replace the ice machines, to get more inventory. I mean, there was, we had this huge liquor, wine delivery right before it happened because we were getting prepared for Halloween. And we were throwing this really big Halloween Dia de los Muertos party. So we had all this inventory that we just had to like pour out in the street. I mean, we have a photo in the New York Times of the whole entire staff just emptying cases in the street because they were all damaged. And it's, you know, wine, you can't, it's a cork, you can't save it. You know, like you can't save all of the, what else did we have downstairs in the basement?
Beers.
Like, I mean, everything, and it's just sort of, it's me as
well. Yeah, freezers.
Yeah, so our freezers were floating, they were upside down. I mean, it was just really, I mean, also, I mean, I was thinking when you were speaking earlier, just to have people to come to help with the cleanup would have been nice. You know, like it's, you know, to have.
We had friends.
We had, yeah, we had
from
people coming
New Jersey.
In.
Like, are you guys
exactly.
okay?
Can you help
but
us?
Our government, you know? our local assistance programs, nobody said, do you need,
yeah,
do you need a sump pump? Do you need a hose? Do you need ladders, flashlights? I mean, we were, the life continued in every other part of the city, which was good for us because friends worked uptown and they brought back candles. You know, while we're busy scooping things out of buckets.
Yeah.
That was a huge one for us to this week.
To just clean it
just
up.
Just
to try to get some sort of organization. You know?
Find things. And
yeah. And, I mean, and we, as a restaurant, we offered, like, free coffee once we were able to get some coffee together for whoever was in the community who wanted some, you know. So, I mean, it was really, like, super devastating. And it's sad that even today we're still trying to, like the money that we use to do better things for the restaurant, to build, you know, expand more or just, you know, keep it up and running, just the day-to-day basis, we just couldn't do it because, like you said, like we got hit at the worst time, you know, from, I mean, and, like, and we're still...
You have to recover slowly. You can't just, you know, like, nobody's going to give you this. Here's a bunch of money, get back everything, and let's get back on our feet. It's just like we still have, you know, a couple of, like, one computer that, you know, that I use for bookkeeping, like the program, the hard drives, and it's hard to put anything away. The spaces are small, so you use your basement. And then there's things that we didn't realize until months later. It's like, oh, yeah, that was in the basement, too. Mm. I can't find that because it was in the basement. So.
The cash flow situation that Lunaris mentioned, guaranteed that it does help you to do is put fuel operators on the street and let them go and do like adjusters do when you have an accident. They send an adjuster. Let them go out and let them talk to the businesses. Because, yeah, ultimately, you know, money would help a lot. And if it was easier, accessible. So put field operators, let them go door by door and say, what happened, what do you mean?
Right.
And then let the adjuster or whoever you send out be the one to say, okay, we're going to lend you $50,000 at 1% or whatever. But yeah, money at that time, you're not going to be able to send somebody to help them do the cleanup. But get them money quick because they need it. Because a lot of businesses, like I know Joselito's, you know, she, even though she has a business, but it's not like she's, you know, Bill Gates. She had to struggle to get the money to fix it. And she said she wasn't going to wait for the government because she knew the government wasn't going to be there to help her. She did it on her own. So she had to pull $40,000 out of her pocket, which she would probably have. So to get money to them quickly would be one of the best things you guys can do.
Or maybe you cut down on costs. What, if we're talking about cash flow, if taxes are part of the rent for the small businesses, would the city be able to look at the property owners and say, listen, for this quarter, for a designated area, forget about the real estate tax and make and find some way to put that through for the small business owners so that they could pay less? I'm not sure how that would work, but I just...
I mean, we can't do that through New York Rising, but we can make these recommendations. So there are things that the money can do, and then there are recommendations that can be submitted with our list of priority projects. And so these are all good suggestions. I mean, whether it'll happen or not is, you know, to be determined. But I do think that they're good, and we should, I encourage you to think about some of these kinds of, you know, policy and programmatic changes that can alleviate the concerns and some of the burden, you know, during a disaster or in these tough times. I mean, you know, what I heard was I lost my inventory. I have to replace my equipment. So I'm already out, you know, $30,000 in goods. Now I have to take a loan that I have to pay back on top of already losing money. And so I think I encourage folks to also recommend grants that don't have to be paid back. Maybe not an entire, you know, maybe you have to take a loan for part of it or some sort of grant, but, you know, this money is clearly not enough for that. But when we voice these issues, you know, maybe when it reaches the right ears, you know, there's a possibility that these things could be considered for the future. So there were a few businesses that did not open up. On 11th Street, my favorite little Japanese place called Casadella. You know, those were the best wings ever. If you've ever been there, you know. And so they took such a hit that they could not open up. So they're gone. Because they could not replace their inventory and pay their rent. And I heard that a lot from folks. If I'm gonna pay, you know, how do I pay my rent and then pay my inventory? And so I do know also that there are several businesses that are still dealing with arrears. And those arrears have added up. So I, you know, it's a, that one's a tough one. You know, I don't know what we do about that. But again, it's also, you know, I mean, I think all the recommendations that people have made are good, but really thinking about quick access to cash or some sort of grant program or some sort of, you know, if we can make recommendations that include tax abatements and other things like that, that would alleviate that financial stress, maybe it would be easier for these businesses to get back on their feet and quicker.
Okay.
Because even after Sandy, like she mentioned, from Barnyard, even after Sandy, even when you had your power back on, and even if you were able to replenish some of your supplies, those credit card machines and EBT machines, in some cases, did not work for weeks and weeks because of the phone lines were out. So, You know, folks were not only out of inventory, equipment, you know, now dealing with cash flow issues, but they weren't even able to bring in the type of cash they normally would bring in during a time which should have been their busiest time, because the phone lines were not working and they couldn't access, they couldn't use the machines, and we heard about that for about a month out. That there were still people dealing with that. I mean, here, we're not a storefront. And, I mean, we're a storefront, but we're not you know, a retail business. But we have many of the same issues that folks had. No power, no internet, no phone lines. And we're not reliant on customers to make our money. We're relying on grant money to run our operation. And so that money is largely already committed, but the amount of work that it created for us, the amount of strain that it put on this operation, I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. Right? I really thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown at one point. And so I can't imagine, you know, if my business relied on, you know, sort of consistent flow of cash having to come through the door and me having to supply something to them, it would have been crazy for us.
So, unfortunately, so they have been excited. I have another meeting and we're preparing these plans, but I've heard some very useful things today about cash flow issues, protecting inventory, how critical it is to go door to door. I think what's interesting about that is, you know, because businesses are relying on being in their businesses typically during the day. So assistance that, like outreach being very important. The importance of cash, to say quick cash and financial assistance for folks, which is something that I don't think we can address through New York Rising just because we don't have funds to provide those kinds of funds, but we can make a recommendation about grants being very important versus loans, for instance. And then it sounds like the direction the committee has been going in with information and technical assistance being important is still the right one, that those things really matter, and that's also useful because then if these other financial assistance programs get it together, then maybe we could also more effectively help people with applications and actually accessing those funds. So this is very useful. I can send you all a summary if that's helpful. And Susan's reported in the meeting. And I think the next steps are the committee is voting on the project that they developed around small business resiliency. And, you know, once they vote, they'll start preparing a final plan with us. And, you know, I think Damaris and me will share the notes and the recording with the committee and the co-chairs. I think we'll just take back your comments and try to incorporate them as best as we can. And we'll, you know, share the final plan with you and hope that this process can lead to something that provides some good assistance.
Yeah. You might just want to recognize the last participant in the meeting.
Yes, Eric.
Yeah, and I want to thank Susan and Damaris for putting this together. I'm Eric Botcher from the governor's office. I knew that this meeting would make the plan a better plan, and I just want to let the small business owners know, even after New York Rising goes into the next phase, the governor's office is an open door. Damaris knows that. Susan knows that. Always feel free to reach out to us if there's anything that we can help with in the future.
And remember the power plant compatibility.
Oh, sorry. I have that written down.
For the businesses that don't get flooded, power plant compatibility.
And okay. I think we should encourage people, because there's going to be a lot of more public meetings to give input. I'm sure everybody here will be on an email list. You've got to participate, whether it's at the community board or these other public meetings. You've got to come say the meeting.
For sure.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks very much for the feedback.
Hello there.
Oh, I thought that was your new card.
Oh, yeah, I'm Anna.
You're from the Seaport?
Hi,
you're
Oh, cool.
This is my.